A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 13, 2002, in the series Once Upon a Time, entitled Creation, Stardust to Human to dot, dot, dot. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5, and 26 and 27, and John 1, verses 1 through 5, 14 and 18. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
I do this morning want to hopefully say something that will enable you at least to know that you had in your midst this outstanding scholar whose scholarship is not an intellectual curiosity as an end in itself, but very practically, in order to learn how to say God today, and how to understand that infinite mystery, that divine presence, the sacred and the holy in the world such as we understand our reality today. For really, our storybook, our ancient text, the Bible, comes from an ancient people and ancient languages that understood the world altogether differently than we did. They had no knowledge of the physical universe as we do, and so their image of God, their imaginings of God, were quite other than those which we would have if we would try to think of God in the light of the cosmos as we understand it, and in the light of our human experience. Probably most people don't even think about that. How to speak of God, to think of God, how to live a human existence, given the world as it is, probably don't even think about that until maybe they pray passionately for the life of a child and the child dies, or plead with God for something else which never comes to fruition, and then get to wondering about the suffering in the world and maybe something as horrible as the Holocaust. And then maybe in moments of solitude there would come a question: where is God? Who is God? Is God at all? David Ray Griffin's work is to try to give us an opening on that eternal transcendent dimension which is not other than our world, but is a part of our world. And this morning I intended anyway to begin a series of messages, and really when I set those things out, eventually as the time comes, I can twist them anyway. So I'm going to keep with the series title, Once Upon a Time, because I want to call to your mind immediately that the things we're going to talk about, and we're going to go to the book of Genesis for these messages, those are stories. Once upon a time, for the ancient religious storytellers, we're dealing with those ultimate questions and that ultimate reality. Why is there something rather than nothing? And what does it mean to be human? Who am I? Whence have I come? And whither am I going? And what does it all mean? Those ultimate questions lived before the rather fearsome reality of a mystery that can never be penetrated. Those early human religious figures, dreamers, poets, told stories. And we have a story too. And our story is precisely that. So, once upon a time, There were Hebrew dreamers and poets and prophets who believed that all that is was the consequence of a word of the Creator God who called it all into being. And that creative act was by a God who was not a part of the created order, but stood above it and continued to guide it and providentially to move it and here and there, now and again, to intervene in it and to interrupt its processes if necessary. That supernatural being we speak of as theism. God out there tweaking the creation which that God called into being. That was the ancient picture, the old story. And we read it again a moment ago. But in this particular message, I entitle it Creation. Stardust to human to... Because we have come to know that we are a part of a cosmic process of 15 billion years. Whether it's 15 or 14 or 16, we won't argue. But we've come to know that all that is part and parcel of the same thing. That this cosmic process has been evolving and unfolding with new emergence over billions of years, and that the stuff that we are is the stuff of the universe. That we human beings are made of star stuff. The explosion of those marvelous stars that sprinkle the inky darkness of the night explode and seed the planets and the galaxies with the elements that are the elements of life. And all reality is uniformly a part of that explosive explosion of elements. And, well, amazing, miracle of miracles, those elements at some point came alive. Was it an amoeba or an algae or a moss? I don't know, but there was life. That point of life, no one there to witness it. And then, greater miracle of all, that life, again over billions of years, eventuating in conscious life. Self-consciousness, consciousness of the other, community, human community. And here we are. Someone has said if you took that 15 billion years and you collapsed it into 1 year so that you had the whole 15 billion years with all of the markers that can be marked as to what developed when and so forth, clapped it all into 1 year, that all of human recorded history would have arrived in the last 15 seconds of the last minute. The last 15 seconds of the last minute. That's who we are. We're Johnny come latelys. We are newcomers. We are a recent, emergent in this whole cosmic process. And there's nothing about us that is any different than that which was part of the process 12 billion years ago. 12, 14, 15 billion years ago. And it's an absolutely an amazing thing. And an expanse of time we can't take in, and an expanse of space that's simply beyond our comprehension. There is one process going on, billions of galaxies and billions of stars and all of that, and this little planet Earth in the midst of a solar system, in the midst of a galaxy, just a speck, just a spinning mud heap, just a pile of rocks, and here we are, human beings, conscious, reflecting on it all. That's amazing. That is really a miracle. And David Ray Griffin is simply one of those thinkers who thinks about all of that. And he's taken in what all of the sciences tell us about that reality. And the philosopher who has informed his work, Alfred North Whitehead, is one who said at the beginning of this century, the problem with the modern period is that it separated matter and mind, or matter and spirit. And the consequence of that in the modern period has been a kind of an absolute materialism, with no one knowing what to do with spirit or even denying its existence. But Alfred North Whitehead said, the thing is that matter is inspirited. The whole thing is permeated, is shot through with spirit, with consciousness. And it's on that kind of, well, radically new conception of reality, although he can go all the way back to Plato, 600 years before Christ, to find echoes of that as well. It's in that kind of a conception of things that he is trying to say, in this totality of which we're a part, God is fully present in it all. And there is a creative spirit nudging and moving, but not coercing, forcing, but beckoning, persuading. The lure of love, if you will, seems to be the way of the cosmos. And this human being that we are, thinking, conscious, aware, one day one was born, and those who encountered him said, that's it. That must be the divine intention for the human. And the beginning was that divine intention. And all things came into being through that one. And in the fullness of time, that divine intention became flesh, human. And no one has ever seen God, but that one, reveals who God is. That's our story. Because we say, concretely, there was a human being. To look upon was to look upon the face of God. And so incarnation, or embodiment, this spirit that inspirits everything becomes concrete in the human form. And the mistake the church made was to say it happened once for all in him. The fact is, it happened in him in order that we might know that it happens in everyone, everywhere, at all times. That it is the human who is the embodiment of the divine, that infinite spirit has become concretized in the human being, and that human being in Jesus. Those who saw him said, that is human. Stardust to human. Human paradigmatically, preeminently, in Jesus, who is our pattern. And then my title says two, three dots. Stardust to human to what? Are we the apex of it all? Are we the summit of it all? Are we the end of it all? Or is there something more? Is there another stage? Let me tell you where we are today. We who have lately come on the scene, we last 15 seconds, human tribe. Let me tell you where we are today. The nation stands on the brink of war. And great religious leaders, the Pope, the Dalai Lama, and others, the conference, the Catholic Conference of Bishops, the National Council of Churches, heads of denominations, all across the board, except the Southern Baptist and Jerry Falwell. But otherwise, quite uniformly across the board, all have said, war is not the answer, war is not the solution. Go slowly, go cautiously. Nobody's listening. I know that we religious leaders really don't deserve any real attention, because what do we know? Face in a book, dealing with sweet communities of people. What do we know about the real world? And I almost find it a little humorous when I think about the universality of the spiritual counsel and the total disregard. It wasn't always that way. But if you want to know the impact of the spiritual community in today's world, you've got a parable before you. Nobody gives a rip about what the church is saying. But I have a little stripe of cynicism in me, so I don't always trust myself, but I have been saying that this whole thing is really finally about oil. And then, praise be to God, yesterday's Grand Rapids Press headline, Seidman bullish on war. William Seidman, a local boy who's made good. At age 81 now, he comes back to Grand Rapids to speak to some business leaders about, it's sort of like insider trading, only this is insider. This is the inside information to a few folks. It's at the Peninsular Club. It's a nice place to eat. And I'll bet you President Bush could shoot him, because he's let the cat out of the bag. Seidman bullish on war. That's an obscene headline. And the article says that he claims that defeating Saddam Hussein and controlling Iraqi oil is at least as important as eliminating weapons of mass destruction. Now, you're getting it from an insider who says that all the political rhetoric about the weapons of mass destruction and the locus of evil that therefore needs to be wiped out, he's really telling us, you're just being played. Because it's not about mass destruction weapons, it's about oil. He goes on to say that it would never deepen the bear market. That's a misleading reading of the market, war that is. Oil prices fluctuating is a very large drag on the economy, ours and the world's, said Seidman. If we are in Iraq, nobody can use oil as a weapon. I think probably the most bullish thing I can think of today is winning the war. We are planning to set up a MacArthur-like government, referring to Japan after World War II. getting control of that oil, and thereby gaining sway with neighboring Saudi Arabia's oil production, will make a vast difference to the economy in all sorts of things, but particularly the price of oil. Having the two major oil producers not part of any radical Muslim or any other unfriendly government, he said, would be a huge additional factor in the world's economy. And then, and this is the clincher, he said he's not surprised that the Bush administration isn't the one heralding a return to profitability by way of war. Oh, really? The administration is not saying that by way of war we could return to profitability? No, he's not surprised they're not doing that. Neither am I. But he says, I deny it specifically on behalf of the government, he said, joking. That's obscene. Now you got the whole religious world trying to whisper in somebody's ear. Nobody's listening. But you got an insider coming back to say, finally, folks, the talk is about eliminating weapons of mass destruction. But finally, it's about oil, because finally, it's about the economy, because finally, it's about beating the bear market and returning to profitability. And you know what? It might work. I may yet be able to retire. It could work. We could go in there, and maybe if we're successful, maybe we'll knock the stuffings out of Saddam, and maybe we'll be able to establish our own puppet government there, and maybe over years, maybe. But you see what we're doing. We are the superpower, and we can act unilaterally. We can have our way in the world. You want to be with us or against us? Well, we don't believe in what you're doing. Do you want to support us or not? The United Nations, we'll go to the United Nations, and we'll use the United Nations if it works, but if it doesn't work, we'll do it alone. And we might pull it off. But don't you see that if we pull it off one more time, we will not have solved anything except the present generation's prosperity? What about the rest of the Muslim world? Why are we the victims of terrorism? Is terrorism not the technique of those who have no power? And is there any power in the world that can protect against terrorism? So you have the irony that here we are, wealthy, powerful, top of our game, and we live with fear. We live with as much fear as a nation as the people around Washington, D.C. are living in fear of a sniper right now. That's the kind of irrationality that cannot be defended against. And so, yes, we can go in there and we can square things around and we can dominate and we can hold on powerfully enough, long enough perhaps, to pull it off for the likes of us for another generation. But eventually, don't we know, eventually it is only justice and compassion that can ever solve the anguish and the agony of the world? Don't we realize the cynicism of this world that talks about being born again and about Jesus, only to go to war when Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers and the merciful and the gentle"? Don't we know what a mockery it is to be called a Christian nation? When we are no more ready, even though we are the superpower that would have it within us to change the game, we will continue one more time to use our power and, if need be, violence and war. And the secret's out. And I understand they've sent a hitman out to get Seidman. Now, don't quote me on that. But I'll bet they could kill him. for letting the cat out of the bag and confirming what some of us have worried about all the time. The passion of David Ray Griffin's life right now is global democracy. He is working now on a book in which he suggests if there were an objective, neutral observer who was good, who had all the facts, and who could adjudicate the human situation, wouldn't that be good? And after all of his philosophical and theological explorations, it is the God reflected in the Jesus of the Sermon on the Mount for whom he sees room in this cosmic process of 15 billion years. What we need is not a little tweaking of the system. What we need is a transformation of human consciousness. What do you think? I'm just blowing bubbles, huh? I'm just blowing smoke. I'm just another idealistic romanticist. I'm just another preacher. But unless there is a transformation of human consciousness that gains a critical mass, that revolutionizes the way we are human with each other, we'll keep on in our tribal ways, and we'll keep killing each other, and we'll continue to be afraid.